I could tell subtle differences after I knew this was a scam. I went back and looked at all of the text conversations, and I could say, oh yeah, this is probably where one person picked up and another one left off. And so, you know, you're dealing with people that are, again, halfway around the world. They've got a very elegant playbook. They've got an answer for everything to make sure that you don't leave. And they're really good at what they do.
Hi, I'm John Kiriakou, and welcome back to Deep Focus. Many of you who know me know that back at around the start of COVID, I was offered a job that at first glance appeared to be the job of a lifetime. I was asked to be the chief operating officer for a small investment firm that was based both in Washington and in Athens, Greece. I happen to be a dual U.S. Greek citizen. I speak Greek. I live in the United States, of course, in the Washington area, but always wanted to live in Athens too. Like I said, this job was like a dream come true. So I leapt at it. The money was fantastic. The benefits were unparalleled. And it took me about 6 weeks to realize that the entire thing was a money laundering scam. So I called my attorney and told him what I had experienced or what I had been experiencing. So I called my attorney and I told him what I'd been experiencing. He instructed me to load all the documents that I possibly could onto a small thumb drive. I did that. And when I got back to Washington, we reached out to the FBI. Couldn't get any traction. In fact, what the FBI told me to do was to call 311. I said, the same number that we use to fill potholes? And he said, yeah, they'll call the local police. The local police will figure out that what you're talking about is a federal crime, and they'll end up referring it to us. I said, I'm not going to call the pothole number. Well, my attorney and I both knew a retired deputy director of the FBI. And so we went through him. He got us an appointment inside the building. So the attorney and I walked over to the Washington field office of the FBI, sat down for our meeting. And I started talking about what I was going through and the documents that I had brought out with me. I was only a few seconds into my explanation when the FBI agent put up his hands and said, guys, if this doesn't have China, Russia, or January 6th somewhere in it, we're not interested. And we ended the meeting and walked out. Well, I talked about this on a podcast. And the director of the Department of Homeland Security's Homeland Security Investigations Unit happened to be watching the podcast, and he reached out to me and said, we investigate more fraud than the FBI has ever investigated. If you want me to take a look, send me what you have. I did. That investigation is ongoing. Well, our guest today reached out to me independently of the Homeland Security Investigations fellow and said that he too had been the subject of a fraud, the victim of a fraud. I sent him to Homeland Security Investigations, and that investigation is now underway. But it's important enough, and it could affect enough people, that we decided to go public on this podcast. Alan Wood, thank you for joining us from Birmingham, Alabama. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, John. I am really glad to of course, we've met before, but to talk about this, you're right. It is a scheme and a fraud of huge. I mean, there are billions and billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars being lost by Americans every year. And just in Alabama alone, I'm working with a special agent with the Securities Commission that he's investigating multi-million dollar frauds every week. And so it's something that's getting worse, not better.
Start us at the beginning. What we're talking about here specifically is crypto. So starting at the beginning, when you first acquired crypto, what happened then?
Well, I first of all, I got divorced about 3 years ago. And so I'm fairly active on Facebook. I don't post everything. I don't put my life out on Facebook, but I do post some things. And so I connected with a woman who claimed to be a Chinese national living in Los Angeles, and she owned a couple of restaurants. And we began talking and conversing back and forth. And she was talking about her investments and how lucrative they'd been for her, how much money she'd been able to make. And she was a divorced person with a couple of kids. So, you know, we had a lot in common. And this went on for a period of weeks. And then we kind of moved off of Facebook. And you'll find this is pretty typical of any fraud. We moved off of Facebook to WhatsApp and then began communicating via WhatsApp. And so, you know, we're talking more and more and said, you know, why don't you try this? Just put a little bit of money in and see how it works. And so I did. I pulled some money out of my bank account, sent it through crypto.com, and she instructed me where to send it to get it into the trading platform that we were working on. And I had a kind of a trading platform, a demo, she called it, where you could trade without having any financial risk and look at what you could make. And we were trading Bitcoin options. So I'm pretty familiar with options, but I'm not familiar with 3, 5, 7, and 10 minute options where you're trading based on the movement of Bitcoin over a very, very short time window. And so that's how it all started. And it, you know, it got pretty big, but that's how it started.
Almost sounds like gambling, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So this is actually not an uncommon situation. It happens all the time. You see references to similar things all the time. What made you think that, what was different about this one that made it appear as a legitimate investment opportunity?
Yeah, you know, good question. I'm a pretty savvy investor, I think, John. But not in the world of Bitcoin. I was learning a lot about it and she was teaching me. And so these are all pretty much romance scams. So they get to know you. They're interested or feign interest in you as a person, as an individual. And it's like, oh, we're going to go have this wonderful life together. We're going to make a lot of money and travel the world and do all this stuff. So it starts out like that. And then we began trading. So again, just a little bit, I think I put maybe $15,000 into a trading account with a platform that was called MEXC, M-E-X-C, which is actually based in the Shelleys. And as I came to find out, the MEXC is not even available to individuals in the U.S. We had a back end, basically a duplicate of that platform that looked exactly the same. And we were trading on that and they were manipulating everything. So you were going to make money. And so the first time I made, I made about $5,000. She said, why don't you take some money out? Encouraged me, just take some money out and go buy something. So I did that. I took, $1,000 out. And sent it back through crypto.com and then to my bank account. And I said, well, gee, you know, this works pretty well. And of course, that's the last time you'll ever see any of your money. Right. But they're very good, John. They're really quite good at what they do and how they develop relationships and these scams. And she had me.
Sure.
I was not particularly, I mean, you know, if I had been in a different stage of life, I was pretty vulnerable then, and they knew it. And they have a really elegant playbook. I call it an extremely elegant playbook. The way that they do things, the answers they have for questions. And as, you know, I found out later on, we're dealing with people quite likely that either they're in North Korea, or they're in Myanmar, quite likely in Myanmar along the Thai border.
That's right.
There are some large compounds there where they're doing this type of crypto fraud. Most of the people are trafficked The criminal gangs, these are Chinese criminal, transnational criminal gangs. They cannot operate in China. China does not allow cryptocurrency trading. So they have to get outside the country and set up their operations, and they'll advertise for people in third world countries and African countries and other places to come and work. They advertise good paying jobs. When they get there, they're immediately put into these trading scams and forced to communicate and make relationships with people and steal their money. They're beaten, quite often beaten. They're told any number of things, threatened quite often. And so I was dealing with, was never really quite sure who I was dealing with. Was this a woman or a man?
Right.
Was, you know, what were the details of what was happening? I do think it was a woman, although I could be wrong. The texture of the conversation, just, you know, the text of things appeared to me to be very female. But you don't know. These guys are really good at what they do.
You know, one time I decided to provoke one of these guys. We all get these texts or emails or DMs or whatever all the time. I decided just to check it out one time just to see how far I could go. And I ended up provoking this person. It was supposed to be, they all use the same Instagram filter, right? So they look like these impossibly gorgeous Asian women in their late 20s, stunning, thin, big boobs, you know, the whole nine yards. And like you said, it's likely just some guy on the Thai-Myanmar border. There's been a lot of reporting out there in the media about these sort of factories of human beings just manning these crypto scam businesses there. And Myanmar, for the most part, is a sort of a no man's land of criminality. Anyway, I was able to provoke this guy, and we start going back and forth. And he got so angry at one point that he either didn't put what he had written into Google Translate, or he did it and it didn't take. Because, you know, they're using Google Translate half the time. What they're telling you doesn't make any sense. So when he sent it to me, he sent me the message, I thought to myself, what the heck language is this? So I cut it and pasted it into Google Translate myself. And for language, I said detect language. And it was in Indonesian. So we don't really know where these things are taking place. When we have general ideas, could be these boiler shops in India. It's probably along the Thai-Myanmar border.
Right.
People are usually human trafficked. It's an ugly situation, but the goal is to take as much of your money as possible. And so it disappears, and it disappears into the pockets of people that are going to be very, very difficult to trace. Let's put it that way. So you realize at some point that this isn't what it appears to be. Is that right?
Oh yeah, I did. I realized it. And I think this happened in early 2023. I think I met this person first in like February, March of 2023. And we communicated for several months and moved to WhatsApp and started trading on this platform and, you know, making money. Oh, we were making a ton of money. You know, we were doing these Bitcoin options, and it wasn't every day. It was like every, maybe once a week, she'd say, oh, you know, there's a trading node that's going to be coming up here in about 3 or 4 days. We need to get prepared for. Then my aunt or my grandmother is telling me about this, and that's code for their handler.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if they've got a grandmother, then she's probably dead. But so, and that's pretty typical. They're all going to talk about some family relation. My grandmother, my aunt, and she taught me how to do all this stuff. I'm so grateful for her. She taught me how to make all this money. doing this, and so I want to help you make a bunch of money. So it'd be maybe once or twice a week, there'd be this trading node. And so we'd go in and invest, and we'd make money always. There were a few times when we'd lose. I had to make it appear to be, legitimate. So there'd be some losing days, but not very many of those. And so over a period of about 4 or 5 months, I invested over $500,000 with these guys. And I think I had, by the time we shut all this stuff down, I had almost $6 million in my trading account. It's pretty significant money.
Yes.
And they always want more. They want more, more, more. So at the end of it, we were talking about, well, I need to take some money out. And I said, well, I'm sorry, you got to pay taxes on that. And well, we just pull the taxes out of my earnings. Said, oh, no, we can't do that. You got to put in new money to pay the taxes. And there are all these fees that you got to pay. Well, just take the fees out of my trading account. Oh, we can't do that. You got to put in new money. So then I knew, of course, this is a scam. This is a fraud. It's a scheme. I've been defrauded. It's hard to realize. Get your mind around the fact that I've lost $500,000 doing this, and I'm quite likely not going to ever get it back. I have a very good friend of mine who's a congressman, and he has a gift for bluntness like nobody I've ever known before. And so when I told him about this, he said, yeah, you've lost all your money. You're never going to get it back. And I said, well, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that. By the way, anything you can help me with? And of course, he suggested the FBI. And I am working with a gentleman at the Alabama Securities Commission who's a former special agent with the FBI. He left them in frustration because nothing ever got done. He came up to see me in Birmingham when all this went down. I had, a conversation log of everything we had ever said on WhatsApp. And all the trading, not the trading, but the deposits that went through crypto.com. He was used some software. I'm not sure exactly what the software is, but he showed me where my money went. Actually, when it left crypto.com, it never went to the trading platform. It went to one or two or three places, then split into multiple different nodes of money. I mean, it's a complete Ponzi scheme. They're using my money to pay back or allow someone else to take a little money out to get them hooked on this scheme.
So do they split it up like that? So it's that much harder to trace and to try to recover, or do you think it was all to feed that Ponzi scheme, feed the pyramid?
Well, I think it's both. I think both of those are at work there. They want to try to hide the money as quickly as possible, make it disappear into a cloud of transactions. And then they're also using it to fund, get some other people hooked on this scam. As I understand it, the money that's made from this, people involved, the government in Myanmar, it's a military junta that is pretty well connected with these criminal gangs. And they're making money out of this, making a ton of money out of this. And my contention with, I talked to both my senators and congressmen about, look, we give Myanmar a hell of a lot of money every year. As a country, we give them a ton of aid. And why are we not using our leverage to make something happen with this stuff? Because the government's getting paid a heck of a lot of money to allow these folks to be where they are. And I know that, it's a civil war that's gone on forever,
right,
in Myanmar.
It's the only country in the world that has been continually at war since World War II.
Yeah, since 1948. Yeah. I know it as the old Burma. I'm an old ham radio operator. I used to talk to a guy in Rangoon years and years ago. So Myanmar was all new to me. I said, well, that's Burma. That's not,
That's right. And it's Rangoon, not Yangon.
So that's the I guess the gist of this, and it is a deep and dark scheme to defraud people. And they're doing it to Australians. They're doing it to New Zealanders. They're doing it to Brits. They're doing it to Americans. Anybody, wherever the money is, they're going to be looking for people to defraud. And we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that these guys are making. And it just doesn't seem that the governments, particularly our government, really just doesn't give a care about this at this point.
I want to ask you about that specifically, but first I need to take a short break to read an ad from our sponsors. So before we get into the second half of this segment, there's something you're probably not hearing about. While you're distracted by headlines, a real transformation is underway. That's the rise of what's called the digital dollar. 134 countries, including the U.S., are developing digital currency. Digital currency. That's a policy that's moving forward right now. That means your transactions could be tracked, your spending could be controlled, your savings vulnerable to instant freezing. That's the direction that public policy is moving toward. Bureaucrats and those suspicious folks at our nation's three-letter agencies, and I know them very well, would love nothing more than to have more information about you. The government calls it innovation, but let's call it what it really is. It's financial surveillance. Well, American Alternative Assets has put together a free guide that shows you how to protect your retirement with physical gold. It's called The Digital Dollar Trap, and it's something every freedom-minded American should read. Inside the free guide, you'll discover how to protect yourself from government overreach with physical assets like gold and silver. So go to johnlovesgold.com right now to get that free guide. That is johnlovesgold.com. Because if the dollar is going digital, you need something real. So you realize, Alan, what is happening, and you decide to go to the authorities. You reach out first to the FBI. Tell us about that. How did you get to the FBI, and what was it that they told you?
Well, that's interesting. I never really had a conversation with the FBI.
Neither did I, unfortunately.
Went down to the local field office in Birmingham, and you get about to the front gate. And then they send the officer of the day down to make a few notes and say a few things. And then that's the last you'll ever hear from the FBI. I think the gentleman I've been working with at the Securities Commission has done more than anybody else has. We actually succeeded in getting the duplicate website shut down. He filed some legal documents and was able to get that shut down. Of course, they can open that back up in a half second somewhere else, but at least it lets them know that someone's owned to them and maybe trying to track them. But you've said before that the CIA, someone at the CIA can start a car remotely and make it drive into a ditch. I think we can probably figure out where these guys are operating and what kind of equipment they're using, and we can do something about it.
There's no national will. Let me correct that. There's no governmental will to do that. But you're exactly right. The technology's there. We could do it if we wanted to. And our partnerships with foreign intelligence services are strong enough that if we really wanted to do it, we could shut these guys down.
Yeah. I mean, in a heartbeat. I think it could be done very, very quickly, very swiftly. I just don't know why there isn't the will to do that. What's the political situation where people in the powerful positions just simply don't care?
Yeah, I'm a fan of these TikTok videos, these TikTok shorts this is what I do when I lay in bed at night. I just flip through TikTok videos, and I watch a lot of guys who are tech savvy, and they sort of turn the technology against the scammers. Like, they'll take a call from a scammer in India invariably, and the scammer will say, you know, I am calling from Microsoft support, and your computer's infected or whatever. You have to go to Target and buy these, you know, Visa gift cards and scratch off the back and read me the number. And so the guy's able to turn their cameras on them. He's able to get their names somehow. And that's always fun. It's fun to watch them panic. They pull the plug, they shut down the computer, whatever. But lately what they've been doing, what the Americans have been doing, is keeping the scammers on the phone, drawing this conversation out as long as possible, and then with another phone calling the local authorities. And so you get to watch, they're able to hack into the office security cameras, and you can watch the cops in Bangalore or Mumbai or wherever they happen to be, watch the cops raid the offices and then lead these guys out in handcuffs. That's really satisfying. So we know it can be done. Because private citizens are doing it. It's that our government isn't doing it.
Well, I'm a little more malevolent than
that.
In
your conversations with these officials,
yeah.
Have you picked up any reason why the government isn't going full bore after these scammers? I mean, it seems to me we've got the technology. This can't be that hard. Why aren't we doing it?
Yeah, I have no idea why we're not doing it. I think you're right. The technology exists. It's there. We could do it if we wanted to. Our elected officials just simply don't care much about it. I would love to push this forward and see some things really happen, you know, that are significant. I'm a little more malevolent, I guess. I would love to be on the other end of an RPG. I could fire into, you know, some of these headquarters and destroy them. But there just has to be something done about this. It's gotten to such a level. If you don't do something about it, then there are people that are committing suicide. They've lost their life savings. I mean, you know, at least I can laugh about it a little bit today. But it's a, you know, it was between an ouch and a boing. I'll recover. I'll be okay. But, it's a heck of a lot of money to lose.
It's a lot of money.
And so there are people who have lost multiple millions of dollars in scams like this. There are people that have committed suicide because of it. It is a huge problem, and we need to be addressing it.
There's a woman in my neighborhood. We're kind of casual friends, and she fell victim to one of these scams. She ended up turning over everything that she had, every cent that she had. And she ended up filing for bankruptcy. And this was after her children repeatedly told her, this is a scam.
Yeah.
But her response was, no, I'm in love with the guy. We're going to have a life together. And they're like, you don't even know if it's a guy. You've never met
right.
the person.
That's right.
Right. And she ended up losing literally everything, her house, her retirement, everything. And then the guy just cut her off.
That's so sad.
You would
My
think that with
position.
so many people being impacted in this way. Yeah. I mean, this is epidemic. We're warned by everybody from you know, national authorities to the local police about different kinds of scams. You would think that there would be a desire within law enforcement, especially at the federal level, to try to shut these things down. You work through the American embassy in whatever country with liaison services or with the local police and you get them shut down. But that's not happening. We're not doing that.
I'm going to keep pushing it forward. I'm going
to
do everything
that's the right thing
I
to do.
Possibly can. I am not going quietly, and I'm going to push it along as far as I can with whoever I can.
Yeah.
Because this stuff has to stop. It's got to be dealt with, and there's got to be a consensus built, I guess, to where the government wants to take some action that's really meaningful. And there have been some recoveries. I noticed there was a recovery of a couple of $100 million a few months ago, and it could be loosely related to my situation. I don't know. But it was from that area of Myanmar, where they recovered some dollars. So, you know, we've got to get on this thing. And it's just not being addressed and not being handled properly. and there's no excuse for it.
There was a piece recently in the New York Times talking about this situation on the border between Myanmar and Thailand. You described it very well. It's essentially slavery, where they advertise for English speakers in countries where English is spoken, like the Philippines, for example, or India. They lure people with promises of very high paying jobs, and then they essentially just keep them as slaves. They confiscate their passports, and they force them to engage in these scams, these frauds, month after month, year after year. It's modern day slavery. It's human trafficking, really, is what
it really is. I mean, you describe it perfectly. I was watching a video the other day, just preparing for our talk, and it was about 15 minutes long, documenting an individual where that very thing had happened. I believe they were from Indonesia. And they were there. They were entrapped in this. They were beaten daily. Their passport was taken away from them. They were told, you've got this much of a quota every day. You've got to scam $5,000 a day. If you don't do that, then, you know, there were regular beatings. They didn't get fed, sleep deprivation, all kinds of stuff that was happening to these folks. And the government, sometimes I know the government of Myanmar has freed some of these people. They're warring factions of these criminal gangs that are fighting one another. And so sometimes that's resulted in these people being freed, but there's a whole bunch of people still in slavery and no way out.
Awful. Awful.
I wanted to ask you too, before we move on to the Department of Homeland Security, did you get any satisfaction at all from the FBI when you went down there?
Oh, none whatsoever.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's a waste of time.
Yeah, neither did I. Nothing. I tried to turn over 15,000 pages of documents proving this large-scale fraud. And I believed also that it was a foreign intelligence service that was behind it. It wasn't just one fraudster. He wasn't smart enough to have carried this out the way it was. I believed that there was a government behind it. And they, even in counterintelligence, they weren't interested at all. So, So HSI reached out to me. I passed the information on to you. And then what happened?
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that. I've spoken with the gentleman.
No thanks necessary. I was very happy to do it.
And then he passed my information along to the two individuals. I actually had a Teams meeting with them yesterday for about 45 minutes. They had gotten the information that I had recommended they get from the agent I'm working with at the Securities Commission. So they got that. They asked a fair number of detailed questions about the fraud. I think they're investigating it. I don't know. Of course, they didn't make any promises about recovery of funds or what they could or couldn't do, but it opens a door and it starts a process that I think could be productive for me, but for a lot of people. I'm going public with this because I want to help as many people as I can not have to endure something like this, or those that have been defrauded can get some of their money back.
That's very, very good of you. And what about the securities officer? We're not talking about the Securities and Exchange Commission here. You're talking about somebody at the state level. Is that right?
It is. It's the Alabama Securities Commission. And so it falls under their purview. This type of scheme. It's a Ponzi scheme. And actually, I was able to, thank goodness, I've got a pretty good accountant, and I had taken a ton of money out of my retirement funds and invested in this. And because it's characterized as a Ponzi scheme, I was able to get all of the taxes I'd paid when I took my retirement funds out. I was able to get that back, which was a little bit of a relief for me because of the way this is characterized.
Oh, thank goodness.
Ellen, what advice would you give to people facing these same kinds of issues? As I said, literally every single American is subject to some sort of outreach from any number of scammers. I had to, with the latest iteration of iOS, I programmed my phone to just reject every number that that is not saved in my phone book. And so where I was getting, 20, 30 calls a day, 80% of which, 85% of which were scams, my phone doesn't even ring anymore unless it's somebody that I know or somebody that I'm expecting to call. So there are some protections. What advice would you give to people facing these issues?
Well, you're a really bright guy, John. I've really loved getting to know you. I mean, you really are.
Thank you. You've got
a world, you've got two or three lifetimes of experience.
Not that I do.
In one life. But your default position has to be everything's a lie until it's proven otherwise.
Oh, that's the best advice
for
a long time.
It has to be, everything is simply a lie until it's proven otherwise. If it's too good to be true, certainly it's not true. And stop it before it even starts.
That's right.
If you think it's too good to be true, there's a great likelihood that that's exactly what it is. It is too good to be true. You got to be very, very careful, very diligent. Only deal with experts in a field, particularly in retirement or planning or investment. Deal with people local. Deal with people that you know and can verify who they are, what they are, what they're doing, and not get involved in this. I mean, crypto to me is just a deep pool of nothing but just evil, corrupt individuals. And I'm sure people would fight me on that and say I'm wrong, and maybe I am, but my experience says differently.
I have to agree with you. I've not invested in crypto just because I'm a little embarrassed to say I don't fully understand it. I put in $400 one time, took it out 6 months later, it had turned into $800. I said, hey, good for me, I made $400. And that's the extent of my experience with crypto. I have friends who are far, far more technologically savvy than I am. And they're all in on crypto. And they say that I'm missing the boat. But there are ways that people can invest in crypto now without the kind of risk that the rest of us, might have faced a year ago or two or three years ago. There are crypto-oriented mutual funds now.
Right.
You can buy Bitcoin and Ethereum through PayPal. You don't even have to set up a Coinbase account. You can just do it through PayPal. There are ways to do it. But it's probably good advice to just not respond to people who reach out to you on social media.
Absolutely. That's not really a good idea. Do you take your investment advice from somebody on Facebook? And look, I did everything wrong, John. I did absolutely everything wrong.
Well,
starting
like
out
said, though,
with this thing,
like you said, you were in a vulnerable point in your life, and that happens to all of us at one time or another. It was just kind of a bad stroke of luck, or I should say, a stroke of bad luck.
Yeah. Well, they call this, we haven't even mentioned the name, but they call this pig butchering. So I don't know if you've heard that term before or not, but it's pig butchering. So they want you to invest money. And the idea is let's blow that money up into a bunch of millions of dollars, and then we're going to butcher this pig, and that's you. Hogs get fat, pigs get slaughtered, right? So then they'll send right behind that, if you've lost a bunch of money, I had this happen too, they'll send somebody behind them saying, hey, I want to help you recover this money you lost. So they're going to try to scoop up whatever change you have left and take that as well. So these people, again, they have an elegant playbook. I have to keep emphasizing that you're dealing with people halfway around the world. They're working shifts. Okay. They've taken copious notes about their relationship with you. what you've said, the conversations you've had. I could tell subtle differences after I knew this was a scam. I went back and looked at all of the text conversations, and I could say, oh yeah, this is a probably where one person picked up and another one left off. And so, you know, you're dealing with people that are, again, halfway around the world. They've got a very elegant playbook. They've got an answer for everything to make sure that you don't leave. And they're really good at what they do.
Alan, you've really done a public service going public with your experience here. You've probably saved people untold thousands of dollars and much greater levels of misery. So I want to thank you for coming on here and talking about this. This is a very important conversation. You said something when we first started this conversation. You said that people have lost untold billions of dollars to scammers. That's true. Billions with a B, billions of dollars. Yes. It wrecks people's lives. You made the point that some people commit suicide after losing money like this and scams like this.
Well, it's shameful that people don't want to know what's happened to them. And so there's a big tendency for people not to even go public with what's happened.
That's right.
To them. So, I mean, you got to get this out and get it in the public sphere. And, you know, it happened to me. I'm not proud of it, but it needs to be publicized. And there's got to be an end to it. And we've got a lot of things the government needs to be doing that they're not doing.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you. You know, just Greece is near and dear to my heart, John. So I spent the summer between high school and college in Europe. And I spent a week and a half in Greece. I was in Athens and just happened to be in Athens when the Greeks and Turks decided they'd fight over some islands.
I got a call. The Aeneid crisis, it's called.
This was 1976. So I got a call from our team leader who said, hey, get packed and get to the airport as soon as you can. And so I got to the airport in Athens, and there are all kinds of soldiers and trucks and tanks and everything around the airport. And we skedaddled out of there about as quick as we could. But I loved being in Greece. I slept outside at night. I stayed with a family. This was called the People-to-People Ambassadors Program, where you stayed with families that had kids your age. And so at night, I slept outside. And for some reason, they thought I would like hot sugared milk at night to drink. Oh my God, I hate that stuff. And so I fed it to the dog every night, and the dog liked it. And I think it was my mistake because I got more of it.
Oh boy. And that's not even a Greek thing. I wonder why they would do that.
I think they thought it was something maybe an American would like. I don't know.
I suspect that was it. I suspect. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming up on 100,000 subscribers. As I've said before, it's because of you. I'm glad that you enjoy these conversations as much as I do. I just love them. So please do us a favor of liking, subscribing, sharing, and talking about these interviews, these conversations with your friends. I'd be very grateful. Alan, thanks again for joining us. And thanks for being with us on Deep Focus. We'll see you next time.
Bye now.